to examine the shattered angel. Its head had cracked straight down the middle. She started muttering something about forces of nature and old stones. But it was the voice at Luce's ear that stayed with her, even after everyone else had gone back to work. It was Molly, just inches behind her shoulder, who whispered, "Looks like someone should start listening when I give advice." 5. The Inner Circle. "Don't ever scare me like that again," Callie reprimanded Luce on Wednesday evening. It was just before sundown, and Luce was folded into the sword and cross phone cubby, a tiny beige confine in the middle of the front office area. It was far from private, but at least no one else was loafing around. Her arms were still sore from the graveyard shift at yesterday's detention, her pride still wounded from Daniel's fleeing the second they'd been pulled out from under the statue. But for 15 minutes, Luce was trying hard to push all that out of her mind, to soak up every blissfully frantic word her best friend could spit out in the allotted time. It felt so good to hear Callie's high-pitched voice. Luce almost didn't care that she was being yelled at. "We promised we wouldn't go an hour without speaking," Callie continued accusingly. "I thought someone had eaten you alive, or that maybe they stuck you in solitary in one of those straitjackets where you have to chew through your sleeve to scratch your face. For all I knew, you could have descended into the ninth circle of..." "Okay, Mom," Luce said, laughing and settling into her role as Callie's breathing instructor. "Relax." For a split second, she felt guilty that she hadn't used her one phone call to dial up her real mom. But she knew Callie would wig out if she ever discovered Luce hadn't seized her very first opportunity to get in touch. And in a weird way, it was always soothing to hear Callie's hysterical voice. It was one of the many reasons the two were such a good fit. Her best friend's over-the-top paranoia actually had a calming effect on Luce. She could just picture Callie in her dorm room at Dover, pacing her bright orange area rug, with oxy smeared over her T-zone and pedicure foam separating her still-wet fuchsia toenails. "Don't mom me," Callie huffed. "Start talking. What are the other kids like? Are they all scary and popping diuretics like in the movies? What about your classes? How's the food?" Through the phone, Luce could hear Roman Holiday playing in the background on Callie's tiny TV. Luce's favorite scene had always been the one where Audrey Hepburn woke in Gregory Peck's room, still convinced the night before had all been a dream. Luce closed her eyes and tried to picture the shot in her mind. Mimicking Audrey's drowsy whisper, she quoted the line she knew Callie would recognize. "There was a man. He was so mean to me. It was wonderful." "Okay, princess, it's your life I want to hear about," Callie teased. Unfortunately, there was nothing about sword and cross that Luce would even consider describing as wonderful. Thinking about Daniel for, the 80th time that day, she realized that the only parallel between her life and Roman Holiday was that she and Audrey both had a guy who was aggressively rude and uninterested in them. Luce rested her head against the beige linoleum of the cubby walls. Someone had carved the words, "Biding my time." Under normal circumstances, this would be when Luce would spill everything about Daniel to Callie. Except, for some reason, she didn't. Whatever she might want to say about Daniel wouldn't be based on anything that had actually happened between them. And Callie was big on guys making an effort to show they were worthy of you. She'd want to hear things like how many times he'd held open a door for Luce, or whether he'd noticed how good her French accent was. Callie didn't think there was anything wrong with guys writing the kind of sappy love poems Luce could never take seriously. Luce would come up severely short on things to say about Daniel. In fact, Callie'd be much more interested in hearing about someone like Cam. "Well, there is this guy here," Luce whispered into the phone.
"I knew it," Callie squealed.
"Name?"
"Daniel. Daniel."
Luce cleared her throat. "Cam." "Direct, uncomplicated. I can dig it. Start from the beginning." Well, nothing's really happened yet. He thinks you're gorgeous, blah, blah, blah. I told you the cropped cut made you look like Audrey. Get to the good stuff.
Well, Luce broke off. The sound of footsteps in the lobby silenced her. She leaned out the side of the cubby and craned her neck to see who was interrupting the best 15 minutes she'd had in 3 whole days. Cam was walking toward her. Speak of the devil. She swallowed the horrifically lame words on the tip of her tongue. He gave me his guitar pick. She still had it tucked in her pocket. Cam's demeanor was casual, as if by some stroke of luck he hadn't heard what she'd been saying. He seemed to be the only kid at Sword and Cross who didn't change out of his school uniform the minute classes were over. But the black-on-black look worked for him, just as much as it worked to make Luce look like a grocery store checkout girl. Cam was twirling a golden pocket watch that swung from a long chain looped around his index finger. Luce followed its bright arc for a moment, almost mesmerized, until Cam clapped the face of the watch to a stop in his fist. He looked down at it, then up at her.
Sorry.
His lips pursed in confusion.
I thought I signed up for the 7 o'clock phone call.
He shrugged.
But I must have written it down wrong.
Luce's heart sank when she glanced at her own watch. She and Callie had barely said 15 words to each other. How could her 15 minutes already be up?
Luce? Hello?
Callie sounded impatient on the other end of the phone.
You're being weird. Is there something you're not telling me? Have you replaced me already with some reform school cutter? What about the boy?
Shh! Luce hissed into the phone. Cam, wait, she called, holding the phone away from her mouth. He was already halfway out the door.
Just a second, I was...
She swallowed.
I was just getting off.
Cam slipped the pocket watch into the front of his black blazer and doubled back toward Luce. He raised his eyebrows and laughed when he heard Callie's voice growing louder from the earpiece.
Don't you dare hang up on me, Callie protested. You've told me nothing, nothing.
I don't want to piss anyone off,
Cam joked, gesturing at the barking telephone.
Take my slot. You can get me back another time.
No, Luce said quickly.
As badly as she wanted to keep talking to Callie, she imagined Cam probably felt the same way about whomever he'd come here to call. And unlike a lot of the people at this school, Cam had been nothing but nice to her. She didn't want to make him give up his turn at the telephone, especially now when she'd be way too nervous to gossip with Callie about him.
Callie, she said, sighing into the phone, I gotta go. I'll call again as soon as...
But by then, there was just the vague buzz of a dial tone in her ear. The phone itself had been rigged to cap each call at 15 minutes. Now she saw the tiny timer blinking 000 on its base. They hadn't even gotten to say goodbye, and now she'd have to wait another whole week to call. Time stretched out in Luce's mind like an endless gulf.
BFF?
Cam asked, leaning up against the cubby next to Luce. His dark eyebrows were still arched.
I've got 3 younger sisters. I can practically smell the best friend vibe through the phone.
He bent forward as if he was going to sniff Luce, which made her chuckle, and then freeze. His unexpected closeness had made her heart pick up.
Let me guess.
Cam straightened back up and lifted his chin.
She wanted to know all about the reform school bad boys.
No.
Luce shook her head to deny vehemently that guys were on her mind at all, until she realized Cam was only kidding. She blushed and took a stab at joking back.
I mean, I told her there's not a single good one here.
Cam blinked.
Precisely what makes it so exciting, don't you think?
He had a way of standing very still, which made Luce stand very still, which made the ticking sound of the pocket watch inside his blazer seem louder than it possibly could have been. Frozen next to Cam, Luce suddenly shivered as something black swooped into the hall. The shadow seemed to hopscotch across the panels in the ceiling in a very deliberate way, blacking out one, and then the next, and then the next. Damn. It was never good to be alone with someone, especially someone as focused on her as Cam was at the moment when the shadows arrived. She could feel herself twitching, trying to appear calm as the darkness swirled around the ceiling fan in a dance. That alone she could have endured. Maybe. But the shadow was also making the worst of its terrible noises, a sound like the one Luce had heard when she'd watched a baby owl fall from its palmetto tree and choke to death. She wished Cam would just stop looking at her. She wished something would happen to divert his attention. She wished Daniel Grigori would walk in. And then he did. Saved by the gorgeous boy wearing holy jeans and a holier white T-shirt. He didn't look much like Salvation, slouched over his heavy stack of library books, gray bags under his gray eyes. Daniel actually looked kind of wrecked. His blonde hair drooped over his eyes, and when they settled on Luce and Cam, Luce watched them narrow. She was so busy fretting over what she'd done to annoy Daniel this time, she almost didn't realize the momentous thing that happened. The second before the lobby door closed behind him, the shadow slipped through it and into the night. It was like someone had taken a vacuum and cleared out all the grit from the hall. Daniel just nodded in their direction and didn't slow down as he passed. When Luce looked at Cam, he was watching Daniel. He turned to Luce and said, more loudly than he needed to, "I almost forgot to tell you. Having a little party in my room tonight after social. I'd love for you to come." Daniel was still within earshot. Luce had no idea what this social thing was, but she was supposed to meet Penn beforehand. They were supposed to walk over together. Her eyes were fixed on the back of Daniel's head, and she knew she needed to answer Cam about his party, and it really shouldn't be so hard. But when Daniel turned around and looked back at her with eyes she swore were mournful, the phone behind her started ringing, and Cam reached for it and said, "I've got to take this, Luce. You'll be there?" Almost imperceptibly, Daniel nodded. "Yes," Luce told Cam. "Yes." "I still don't see why we have to run," Luce was panting 20 minutes later. She was trying to keep up with Penn as they scrambled back across the commons toward the auditorium for the mysterious Wednesday night social, which Penn still hadn't explained. Luce had barely enough time to make it upstairs to her room, to slick on lip gloss and her better jeans, just in case it was that kind of social. She was still trying to slow her breath down from her run-in with Cam and Daniel when Penn barged into her room to drag her back out the door. People who are chronically tardy never understand the many ways in which they screw up the schedules of people who are punctual and normal, Penn told Luce as they splashed through a particularly soggy portion of the lawn. "Ha!" A laugh erupted behind them. Luce looked back and felt her face light up when she saw Arian's pale, skinny frame jogging to catch up with them. "Which quack said you were normal, Penn?" Arian nudged Luce and pointed down. "Watch out for the quicksand." Luce sloshed to a halt just before she'd have landed in a scarily muddy patch on the lawn. "Somebody please tell me where we're going." "Wednesday night," Penn said flatly. "Social night." "Like a dance or something?" Luce asked, visions of Daniel and Cam already moving across the dance floor of her mind. Arian hooted. "A dance with death by boredom. The term social is typical sword and cross doublespeak. See, they're required to schedule social events for us, but they are also terrified of scheduling social events for us. Sticky pridicky." "So instead," Penn added, "they have these really awful events, like movie nights followed by lectures about the movie, or... God, do you remember last semester? There was that whole symposium on taxidermy." "So, so creepy." Penn shook her head. "Tonight, my dear," Arian drawled, "we get off easy. All we have to do is snore through one of the 3 movies on rotation in the Sword and Cross video library. Which one do you think it'll be tonight, Penny Loafer? Starman? Joe versus the Volcano, or Weekend at Bernie's.
It's Starman, Penn groaned. Arion shot Luce a baffled look. She knows everything.
Hold on, Luce said, tiptoeing around the quicksand and lowering her voice to a whisper as they approached the front office of the school. If you've all seen these movies so many times, why the rush to get here?
Penn pulled open the heavy metal doors to the auditorium, which, Luce realized, was a euphemism for a regular old room with low, drop-paneled ceilings and chairs arranged to face a blank white wall.
Don't want to get stuck in the hot seat next to Mr. Cole, Arion explained, pointing at the teacher. His nose was buried deep inside a thick book, and he was surrounded by the few remaining empty chairs in the room.
As the three girls stepped through the metal detector at the door, Penn said, Whoever sits there has to help pass out his weekly mental health surveys.
Which wouldn't be so bad, Arion chimed in. If you didn't have to stay late to analyze the findings, Penn finished.
Thereby missing, Arion said with a grin, steering Luce toward the second row as she whispered, The after party.
Finally, they'd gotten down to the heart of the matter. Luce chuckled.
I heard about that, she said, feeling slightly with it for a change. It's in Cam's room, right?
Arion looked at Luce for a second and ran her tongue across her teeth. Then she looked past, almost through Luce.
Hey, Todd, she called, waving with just the tips of her fingers.
She pushed Luce into one seat, claimed the safe spot next to her, still two seats down from Mr. Cole, and patted the hot seat.
Come sit with us, T-Man.
Todd, who'd been shifting his weight in the doorway, looked immensely relieved to be given the directive, any directive. He started toward them, swallowing. No sooner had he fumbled into the seat than Mr. Cole looked up from his book, cleaned his glasses on his handkerchief, and said, Todd, I'm glad you're here. I'm wondering if you can help me with a small favor after the film. You see, the Venn diagram is a very useful tool for...
Mean!
Penn popped her face up between Arion and Luce. Arion shrugged and produced a giant bag of popcorn from her carpet bag.
I can only look after so many new students, she said, tossing a buttery kernel at Luce. Lucky you.
As the lights in the room dimmed, Luce looked around until her eyes landed on Cam. She thought about her abbreviated dish session on the phone with Callie, and how her friend always said that watching a movie with a guy was the best way to get to know things about him, things that might not come out in a conversation. Looking at Cam, Luce thought she knew what Callie meant. There would be something sort of thrilling about glancing out of the corner of her eye to see what jokes Cam thought were funny, to join his laughter with her own. When his eyes met hers, Luce felt an embarrassed instinct to look away. But then, before she could, Cam's face lit up in a broad smile. It made her feel remarkably unabashed about being caught staring. When he put his hand up in a wave, Luce couldn't help thinking about how the exact opposite had happened the few times Daniel had caught her looking at him. Daniel rolled in with Roland, late enough that Randy had already taken a head count, late enough that the only remaining seats were on the floor at the front of the room. He passed through the beam of light from the projector, and Luce noticed, for the first time, a silver chain around his neck and some sort of a medallion tucked inside his T-shirt. Then he dipped completely out of her view. She couldn't even see his profile. As it turned out, Starman wasn't very funny, but the other students' constant Jeff Bridges impersonations were. It was hard for Luce to stay focused on the plot. Plus, she was getting that uncomfortable, icy feeling at the back of her neck. Something was about to happen. When the shadows came this time, Luce was expecting them. Then she started to think about it and counted a tally on her fingers. The shadows had been popping up at an increasingly alarming rate, and Luce couldn't figure out whether she was just nervous at Sword and Cross or whether it meant something else. They'd never been this bad before. They oozed overhead in the auditorium, then slithered along the sides of the movie screen, and finally traced the lines of the floorboards like spilled ink. Luce gripped the bottom of her chair and felt an ache of fear swell through her legs and arms. She tightened all the muscles in her body, but she couldn't keep from trembling. A squeeze on her left knee made her look over at Arian.
"You okay?" Arian mouthed.
Luce nodded and hugged her shoulders, pretending she was merely cold. She wished she was, but this particular chill had nothing to do with Sword and Cross's overzealous air conditioner. She could feel the shadows tugging at her feet under her chair. They stayed like that, dead weight, for the whole movie, and every minute dragged on like an eternity. An hour later, Arian pressed her eye up against the peephole of Cam's bronze-painted dorm room door.
"Yoo-hoo!" she sang, giggling. "The festivities are here!"
She produced a hot pink feather boa from the same magic carpet bag the bag of popcorn had come from. "Give me a boost," she said to Luce, dangling her foot in the air. Luce hooked her fingers together and positioned them under Arian's black boot. She watched as Arian pushed off the ground and used the boa to cover the face of the hallway surveillance camera while she reached around the back of the device and switched it off.
"That's not suspicious or anything," Penn said.
"Does your allegiance lie with the after-party?" Arian shot back.
"Or the red party?"
"I'm just saying there are smarter ways," Penn snorted as Arian hopped down.
Arian slung the boa over Luce's shoulders, and Luce laughed and started to shimmy to the Motown song they could hear through the door. But when Luce offered the boa to Penn for a turn, she was surprised to see her still looking nervous. Penn was biting her nails and sweating at the brow. Penn wore 6 sweaters in the swampy southern September heat. She was never hot.
"What's wrong?" Luce whispered, leaning in.
Penn picked at the hem of her sleeve and shrugged. She looked like she was just about to answer when the door behind them opened up. A whoosh of cigarette smoke, blasting music, and suddenly Cam's open arms greeted them.
"You made it," he said, smiling at Luce.
Even in the dim light, his lips had a berry-stained glow. When he folded her in for a hug, she felt tiny and safe. It lasted only a second, then he turned to nod hello at the other 2 girls, and Luce felt a little proud to have been the one who got the hug. Behind Cam, the small dark room was crammed with people. Roland was in one corner, at the turntable, holding up records to a black light. The couple Luce had seen on the quad a few days before cozied up against the window. The preppy boys with the white Oxford shirts were all huddled up together, occasionally checking out the girls. Arian wasted no time shooting across the room toward Cam's desk, which looked like it was doubling as a bar. Almost immediately, she had a champagne bottle between her legs and was laughing as she tried to pry off the cork. Luce was baffled. She hadn't even known how to get booze at Dover, where the outside world had been a lot less off-limits. Cam had been back at Sword and Cross for only a few days, but already he seemed to know how to smuggle everything he needed to throw a Dionysian soiree the entire school showed up to. And somehow, everyone else inside thought this was normal. Still standing at the threshold, she heard the pop, then the cheers from the rest of the crowd, then Arian's voice calling out, "Lucinda, get in here. I'm about to make a toast." Luce could feel the party's magnetism, but Penn looked much less ready to budge.
"You go ahead," she said, waving a hand at Luce.
"What's wrong? You don't want to go in?" The truth was, Luce was a little nervous herself. She had no idea what might go down at these things, and since she still wasn't sure how reliable Arian was, it would definitely make her feel better to have Penn at her side. But Penn frowned.
I'm out of my element. I do libraries, workshops on how to use PowerPoint. You want a file hacked into, I'm your girl. But this..."
She stood on tiptoes and peered into the room.
"I don't know. People in there just think I'm some kind of know-it-all."
Luce attempted her best give me a break, frown. And they think I'm a slab of meatloaf, and we think they're all totally bananas. She laughed. Can't we all just get along? Slowly, Pen curled her lip, then took the feather boa and draped it around her shoulders.
Oh, all right, she said, clumping inside ahead of Luce.
Luce blinked as her eyes adjusted. A cacophony filled the room, but she could hear Arian's laughing voice. Cam shut the door behind her and tugged Luce's hand so she'd hang back, away from the heart of the party.
"I'm really glad you came," he said, putting his hand on the small of her back and bending his head so she could hear him in the loud room.
Those lips looked almost tasty, especially when they said things like,
"I jumped up every time someone knocked, hoping it'd be you."
Whatever had drawn Cam to her so quickly, Luce didn't want to do anything to mess it up. He was popular and unexpectedly thoughtful, and his attention made her feel more than flattered. It made her feel more comfortable in this strange new place. She knew if she tried to respond to his compliment, she'd stumble over the words. So she just laughed, which made him laugh, and then he pulled her in for another hug. Suddenly, there was no place to put her own hands but around his neck. She felt a little light-headed as Cam squeezed her, lifting her feet slightly off the ground. When he put her back down, Luce turned to the rest of the party, and the first thing she saw was Daniel. But she didn't think he liked Cam. Still, he was sitting cross-legged on the bed, his white T-shirt glowing violet in the black light. As soon as her eyes found him, it was hard to look anywhere else. Which didn't make sense, because a gorgeous and friendly guy was standing right behind her, asking her what she'd like to drink. The other gorgeous, infinitely less friendly guy sitting across from her should not be the one she couldn't stop looking at. And he was staring at her, so intently, with a cryptic, squinting look in his eyes that Luce thought she'd never decode, even if she saw it 1,000 times. All she knew was the effect it had on her. Everyone else in the room went out of focus, and she melted. She could have stared back all night if it hadn't been for Arian, who had climbed on top of the desk and called out to Luce, her glass raised in the air. "To Luce," she toasted, giving Luce a saintly smile. "Who was obviously zoning and missed my entire welcome speech, and who will never know how utterly fabulous it was. Wasn't it fabulous, Ro?" She leaned down to ask Roland, who patted her ankle affirmatively. Cam slipped a plastic cup of champagne into Luce's hand. She blushed and tried to laugh it off as the whole rest of the party echoed, "To Luce! To Meatloaf!" At her side, Molly slithered up and whispered a shorter version in her ear, "To Luce, who will never know." A few days before, Luce would have flinched away. Tonight, she simply rolled her eyes, then turned her back on Molly. The girl had never said a word that didn't leave Luce feeling bitten, but showing it seemed only to egg her on. So Luce just hunkered down to share the desk chair with Pen, who handed her a rope of black licorice.
"Can you believe it? I think I'm actually having fun," Pen said, chewing happily.
Luce bit down on the licorice and took a tiny sip of the fizzy champagne. Not a very palatable combination. Kind of like her and Molly.
"So is Molly that evil to everyone, or am I a special case?"
For a second, Pen looked like she was going to give a different answer, but then she patted Luce on the back.
"Just her usual charming demeanor, my dear."
Luce looked around the room at all the free-flowing champagne, at Cam's fancy vintage turntable, at the disco ball spinning over their heads, casting stars on everyone's faces.
"Where do they get all this stuff?" she wondered aloud. "People say Roland can smuggle anything into Sword and Cross," Pen said matter-of-factly. "Not that I've ever asked him."
Maybe this was what Arian meant when she said Roland knew how to get things. The only off-limits item Luce could imagine wanting badly enough to ask about was a cell phone. But then, Cam had said not to listen to Arian about the inner workings of the school, which would have been fine, except so much of his party seemed to be courtesy of Roland. The more she tried to untangle her questions, the less things added up. She should probably stick to being just in enough to get invited to the parties.
"Okay, all you rejects," Roland said loudly to get everyone's attention.
The record player had quieted down to the static between songs.
"We're going to start the open mic portion of the night, and I'm taking requests for karaoke."
"Daniel Grigori,"
Arian hooted through her hands.
"No,"
Daniel hooted back without missing a beat.
"Aw, the silent Grigori sits another one out," Roland said into the microphone. "You sure you don't want to do your version of Hellhound on My Trail?"
"I believe that's your song, Roland," Daniel said.
A faint smile spread across his lips, but Luce got the feeling it was an embarrassed smile, a someone-else-take-the-spotlight-please smile.
"He's got a point, folks,"
Roland laughed.
"Though karaokeing Robert Johnson has been known to clear out a room."
He plucked an R.L. Burnside album from the stack and cued the record player in the corner.
"Let's go down south instead."
As the bass notes of an electric guitar picked up, Roland took center stage, which was really just a few square feet of moonlit, empty space in the middle of the room. Everyone else was clapping or stomping their feet in time, but Daniel was looking down at his watch. She kept seeing the image of him nodding at her in the lobby earlier that night when Cam invited her to the party. Like Daniel wanted her there for some reason. Of course, now that she'd shown up, he made no move to acknowledge her existence. If only she could get him alone. Roland so monopolized the attention of the guests that only Luce noticed when, midway through the song, Daniel stood up, edged himself around Molly and Cam, and slipped silently out the door. This was her chance. While everyone around her was applauding, Luce slowly got to her feet.
"Encore!" Arian called out.
Then, noticing Luce rising from her chair, she said,
"Oh, snap! Is that my girl stepping up to sing?"
"No." Luce did not want to sing in front of this room full of people any more than she wanted to admit the real reason why she was standing up. But there she was, standing right in the middle of her first party at Sword and Cross, with Roland thrusting the mic under her chin. Now what?
I just feel bad for, Todd, that he's missing out."
Luce's voice echoed back to her over the speakers. She was already regretting her bad lie and the fact that there was no turning back now.
"I thought I'd run down and see if he's done with Mr. Cole."
None of the other kids seemed to know quite what to do with this. Only Penn called out timidly,
"Hurry back."
Molly was smirking down her nose at Luce.
"Geek love," she said, fake swooning. "So romantic."
Wait, did they think she liked Todd? Oh, who cared? The one person Luce would really not want thinking that was the one person she'd been trying to follow outside. Ignoring Molly, Luce scooted toward the door, where Cam met her with crossed arms.
"Want company?"
he asked hopefully. She shook her head. On any other errand, she probably would have wanted Cam's company, but not right now.
"I'll be right back," she said brightly.
Before she could register the disappointment on his face, she slinked out into the hall. After the roar of the party, the quiet rang in her ears. It took a second before she could make out hushed voices just around the corner.
Daniel.
She'd recognize his voice anywhere. But she was less certain who he was talking to. A girl.
"I'm sorry,"
whoever she was said, with a distinctive southern twang.
Gabby?
Daniel had been sneaking out to see blonde and airbrushed Gabby?
"It won't happen again," Gabby continued. "I swear to..."
"It can't happen again,"
Daniel whispered, but his tone practically screamed lover's quarrel.
"You promised you'd be there, and you weren't."
"Where? When?" Luce was in agony. She inched along the hallway, trying not to make a sound. But the two of them had fallen silent. Luce could picture Daniel taking Gabby's hands in his. could picture him leaning into her for a long, deep kiss. A sheet of all-consuming envy spread across Luce's chest. Around the corner, one of them sighed. "You're going to have to trust me, honey," she heard Gabby say in a saccharine voice that made Luce decide, once and for all, that she hated her. "I'm the only one you've got." 6. No Salvation. Bright and early Thursday morning, a loudspeaker crackled to life in the hallway outside Luce's room. "Attention, Sword and Crostians!" Luce rolled over with a groan, but as hard as she crammed the pillow around her ears, it did little to block out Randy's bark over the PA. "You have exactly 9 minutes to report to the gymnasium for your annual fitness examination. As you know, we take a dim view of stragglers, so be prompt and be ready for bodily assessment." Fitness examination? Bodily assessment? At 6:30 in the morning? Luce had already been regretting staying out so late last night, and staying up so much later lying in bed, stressing. Right around the time she started imagining Daniel and Gabby kissing, Luce had begun to feel queasy. That specific kind of queasiness that came from knowing she'd made a fool of herself. There was no going back to the party. There was only prying herself off the wall and slinking back to her dorm room to second-guess that strange feeling she got around Daniel, the one she'd foolishly taken as some sort of connection. She'd woken up with the bad taste of the party's aftermath still in her mouth. The last thing she wanted to think about now was fitness. She swung her feet off the bed and onto the cold vinyl floor. Brushing her teeth, she tried to picture what Sword and Cross might mean by bodily assessment. Intimidating images of her fellow students, Molly doing dozens of mean-faced chin-ups, Gabby effortlessly ascending a 30-foot rope toward the sky, flooded her mind. Her only shot at not making a fool out of herself, again, was to try to put Daniel and Gabby out of her mind. She crossed the south side of campus to the gymnasium. It was a large Gothic structure with flying buttresses and fieldstone turrets that made it look more like a church than a place where one would go to break a sweat. As Luce approached the building, the layer of kudzu coating its facade rustled in the morning breeze. "Pen!" Luce called out, spotting her tracksuit-clad friend lacing up her sneakers on a bench. Luce looked down at her regulation black clothes and black boots and suddenly panicked that she'd missed some memo about dress code. But then, some of the other students were loitering outside the building, and none of them looked much different than she did. Penn's eyes were groggy. "So beat," she moaned. "I karaoke'd way too hard last night. Thought I'd compensate by trying to at least look athletic." Luce laughed as Penn fumbled with the double knot on her shoe. "What happened to you last night, anyway?" Penn asked. "You never came back to the party." "Oh," Luce said, stalling. "I decided to..." "Gah!" Penn covered her ears. "Every sound is like a jackhammer in my brain. Tell me later." "Yeah," Luce said. "Sure." The double doors to the gym were thrust open. Randy stepped out in heavy rubber clogs, holding her ever-present clipboard. She waved the students forward, and one by one they filed past to be assigned their fitness station. "Todd Hammond," Randy called, as the wobbly-kneed kid approached. Todd's shoulders caved forward like parentheses, and Luce could see remnants of a serious farmer's tan on the back of his neck. "Weights," Randy commanded, chucking Todd inside. "Pennyweather Van Sickle Lockwood," she bellowed next, causing Penn to cower and press her palms against her ears again. "Pull," Randy instructed, reaching into a cardboard box behind her and tossing Penn a red one-piece Speedo racerback. "Lucinda Price," Randy continued, after consulting her list. Luce stepped forward and was relieved when Randy said, "Also pull." Luce reached up to catch the one-piece bathing suit in the air. It was stretched out and thin as a piece of parchment between her fingers. At least it smelled clean. Sort of. "Gabrielle Givens," Randy said next, and Luce whipped around to see her new, least favorite person sashay up in short black shorts and a thin black tank top. She'd been at the school for 3 days. How had she already gotten Daniel?
"Hi, Randy," Gabby said, drawing out the words with a twang that made Luce want to pull a pen and cover her own ears.
"Anything but pool," Luce willed. "Anything but pool."
"Pool," Randy said.
Walking next to Penn toward the girls' locker room, Luce tried to avoid looking back at Gabby, who twirled what seemed to be the only fashionable bathing suit in the stack around her French-manicured index finger. Instead, Luce focused on the gray stone walls and the old religious paraphernalia covering them. She walked past ornately carved wooden crosses with their bas-relief depictions of the Passion. A series of faded triptychs hung at eye level, with only the orbs of the figure's halo still aglow. Luce leaned forward to get a better look at a large scroll written in Latin, encased in glass.
"Uplifting decor, isn't it?" Penn asked,
throwing back a couple of aspirin with a swig of water from her bag.
"What is all this stuff?" Luce asked. "Ancient history. The only surviving relics from when this place was still the site of Sunday Mass, back in Civil War days."
"That explains why it looks so much like a church," Luce said, pausing in front of a marble reproduction of Michelangelo's Pietà.
"Like everything else in this hellhole, they did a totally half-assed job of updating it. I mean, who builds a pool in the middle of an old church?"
"You're joking," Luce said.
"I wish."
Penn rolled her eyes. "Every summer, the headmaster gets it in his little mind to try and stick me with the task of redecorating this place. He won't admit it, but all the god stuff really freaks him out," she said. "Problem is, even if I did feel like pitching in, I'd have no idea what to do with all this junk, or even how to clear it out without offending, like, everyone and God."
Luce thought back to the immaculate white walls inside Dover's gymnasium, row after row of professionally shot varsity championship pictures, each matted with the same navy cardstock, each showcased in a matching golden frame. The only hallway more hallowed at Dover was its entryway, which was where all the alumni-turned state senators and Guggenheim Fellowship winners and run-of-the-mill billionaires displayed their headshots.
"You could hang all the current alumni's mugshots," Gabby offered from behind them. Luce started to laugh. It was funny. And strange, almost like Gabby had just read her mind. But then she remembered the girl's voice the night before, telling Daniel she was the only one he had. Luce quickly swallowed any notion of a connection with her.
"You're straggling," yelled an unknown gym coach, appearing from nowhere.
She, at least Luce thought she was a she, had a frizzy wad of brown hair pulled back in a ponytail, calves like ham hocks, and yellowing, invisible braces covering her top teeth. She hustled the girls angrily into a locker room, where each was given a padlock with a key and directed toward an empty locker with a shove.
"Nobody straggles on Coach Deonti's watch."
Luce and Penn scrambled into their faded, baggy bathing suits. Luce shuddered at her reflection in the mirror, then covered as much of herself as she could with her towel. Inside the humid natatorium, she instantly understood what Penn was talking about. The pool itself was giant, Olympic-sized, one of the few state-of-the-art features she'd encountered so far on this campus. But that wasn't what made it remarkable, Luce realized in awe. This pool had been set down right in the middle of what used to be a massive church. There was a row of pretty stained glass windows with only a few broken panels spanning the walls near the high arch ceiling. There were candlelit stone niches along the wall. A diving board had been installed where the altar probably used to be. If Luce had not been raised agnostic, but rather as a God-fearing churchgoer, like the rest of her friends in elementary school, she might have thought this place was sacrilegious. Some of the other students were already in the water, gasping for air as they completed their laps. But it was the students who weren't in the water who held Luce's attention. Molly, Roland, and Arian were all spread out on the bleachers along the wall. They were cracking up about something. Roland was practically doubled over, and Arian was wiping away tears. They were in much more attractive bathing suits than Luce, but not one of them looked like they had any intention of making a move toward the pool. Luce picked at her saggy one-piece. She wanted to go join Arian, but just as she was weighing the pros, possible entrance into an elite world, and cons, Coach Deontay berating her as a conscientious objector to exercise, Gabby sauntered over to the group, like she was already best friends with all of them. She took a seat right next to Arian and immediately started laughing, too, like whatever the joke was, she already got it. "They always have notes to sit out," Penn explained, glaring at the popular crowd on the bleachers. "Don't ask me how they get away with it." Luce hemmed and hawed at the side of the pool, unable to tune in to Coach Deontay's instructions. Seeing Gabby et al. Clustered on the bleachers, cool kid style, made Luce wish that Cam were there. She could picture him looking buff in a sleek black bathing suit, waving her over to the crew with his big smile, making her feel immediately welcome, even important. Luce felt a gnawing need to apologize for ducking out of his party early. Which was strange. They weren't together, so it wasn't like Luce was obligated to explain her comings and goings to Cam. But at the same time, she liked it when he paid attention to her. She liked the way he smelled, kind of free and open, like driving with the windows down at night. She liked the way he tuned into her completely when she talked, holding still, like he couldn't see or hear anyone but her. She'd even liked being lifted off her feet at the party, in plain view of Daniel. She didn't want to do anything to make Cam reconsider the way he treated her. When the coach's whistle blew, a very startled Luce stood straight up, then looked down regretfully as Penn and the other students near her all jumped forward into the pool. She looked to Coach Deontay for guidance.
"You must be Lucinda Price, always late and never listens."
Coach sighed.
"Randy told me about you. It's 8 laps, pick your best stroke."
Luce nodded and stood with her toes curled over the edge. She used to love to swim. When her dad taught her how at the Thunderbolt Community Pool, she'd even been given an award as youngest kid ever to brave the deep end without floaties. But that was years ago. Luce couldn't even remember the last time she'd swum. The heated outdoor Dover pool had always sparkled, tempting her, but it was closed to anyone who wasn't on the swim team. Coach Deontay cleared her throat.
"Maybe you didn't catch that this is a race, and you're already losing."
This was the most pathetic and ridiculous race that Luce had ever seen, but it didn't stop her competitive edge from coming out.
"And you're still losing," Coach said, chewing on her whistle.
"Not for long," Luce said. She checked out the competition. The guy to her left was sputtering water out of his mouth and doing a clumsy freestyle. On her right, a nose-plugged Pen was leisurely gliding along, her stomach resting on a pink foam kickboard. For a split second, Luce glanced at the crowd on the bleachers. Molly and Roland were watching. Arian and Gabby were collapsed on each other in an annoying fit of giggles. But she didn't care what they were laughing at. Sort of. She was off. With her arms bowed over her head, Luce dove in, feeling her back arch as she glided into the crisp water. Few people could do it really well, her dad once explained to an 8-year-old Luce at the pool. But once you perfected the butterfly stroke, there was no way to move faster in the water. Letting her aggravation propel her forward, Luce lifted her upper body out of the water. The movement came right back to her, and she started to beat her arms like wings. She swam harder than she'd done anything in a long, long time. Feeling vindicated, she lapped the other swimmers once, then again. She was nearing the end of her 8th lap when her head popped above water just long enough to hear Gabby's slow voice say, "Daniel!" Like a snuffed-out candle, Luce's momentum disappeared. She put her feet down and waited to see what else Gabby had to say. Unfortunately, she couldn't hear anything other than a raucous splashing and, a moment later, the whistle.
"And the winner is..."
Coach Deonti said with a stunned expression. Joel Bland. The skinny kid with braces from the next lane over hopped out of the pool and started raising the roof to celebrate his victory. In the next lane, Penn kicked to a stop.
What happened? She asked Luce. You were totally killing him.
Luce shrugged. Gabby was what had happened, but when she looked over at the bleachers, Gabby was gone, and Arian and Molly were gone with her. Roland alone remained where the crowd had been, and he was immersed in a book. Luce's adrenaline had been building while she swam, but now she'd crashed so hard Penn had to help her out of the pool. Luce watched Roland hop down from the bleachers.
You were pretty good out there, he said, tossing her a towel and the locker room key she'd lost track of. For a little while.
Luce caught the key in midair and wrapped the towel around her. But before she could say something normal, like, thanks for the towel, or guess I'm just out of shape, this weird new hot-headed side of her instead blurted out, are Daniel and Gabby together or what? Big mistake. Huge. She could tell from the look in his eye that her question was headed right to Daniel.
Oh, I see, Roland said, and laughed. Well, I couldn't really.
He looked down at her and scratched his nose and gave her what seemed like a sympathetic smile. Then he pointed toward the open hallway door, and when Luce followed his finger, she saw Daniel's trim, blonde silhouette pass by.
Why don't you just ask him yourself?
Luce's hair was still dripping wet, and her feet were still bare when she found herself hovering at the door to a large weight room. She'd intended to go straight into the locker room to change and dry off. She didn't know why this Gabby thing was shaking her up so much. Daniel could be with whomever he wanted, right? Maybe Gabby liked guys who flipped her off. Or, more likely, that kind of thing didn't happen to Gabby. But Luce's body got the better of her mind when she caught another glimpse of Daniel. His back was to her, and he was standing in a corner picking out a jump rope from a tangled pile. She watched as he selected a thin navy rope with wooden handles, then moved to an open space in the center of the room. His golden skin was almost radiant, and every movement he made, whether he was rolling out his long neck in a stretch or bending over to scratch his sculpted knee, had Luce completely wrapped. She stood pressed against the doorway, unaware that her teeth were chattering and her towel was soaked. When he brought the rope behind his ankles just before he began to jump, Luce was slammed with a wave of déjà vu. It wasn't exactly that she felt like she'd seen Daniel jump rope before, but more that the stance he took seemed entirely familiar. He stood with his feet hip-width apart, unlocked his knees, and pressed his shoulders down as he filled his chest with air. Luce could almost have drawn it. It was only when Daniel began twirling the rope that Luce snapped out of that trance, and right into another. Never in her life had she seen anyone move like him. It was almost like Daniel was flying. The rope whipped up and over his tall frame so quickly that it disappeared, and his feet, his graceful, narrow feet, were they even touching the ground? He was moving so swiftly, even he must not have been counting. A loud grunt and a thud on the other side of the weight room tore Luce's attention away. Todd was in a heap at the base of one of those knotted climbing ropes. She felt momentarily sorry for Todd, who was looking down at his blistered hands. Before she could look back at Daniel to see whether he'd even noticed, a cold black rush at the edge of her skin made Luce shiver. The shadow swept up on her slowly at first, icy, tenebrous, its limits indiscernible. Then, suddenly rough, it crashed into her body and forced her back. The door to the weight room slammed in her face, and Luce was alone in the hallway. Ow! She cried, not because she was hurt exactly, but because she had never been touched by the shadows before. She looked down at her bare arms, where it had felt almost like hands had gripped her, shoving her out of the gym. That was impossible. She'd just been standing in a weird place. A draft must have shot through the gymnasium. Uneasily, she approached the closed door and pressed her face up against the small glass rectangle. Daniel was looking around, like he'd heard something. She felt certain he didn't know it was her. He wasn't scowling. She thought about Roland's suggestion that she just ask Daniel what was up, but quickly dismissed the notion. It was impossible to ask anything of Daniel. She didn't want to bring out that scowl on his face. Besides, any question she might pose would be useless. She'd already heard all she needed to hear last night. She'd have to be some kind of sadist to ask him to admit he was with Gabby. She turned back toward the locker room when she realized she couldn't leave. Her key. It must have slipped from her hands when she stumbled out of the room. She stood on tiptoes to look down through the small glass panel on the door. There it was, a bronze blunder on the padded blue mat. How had it gotten so far across the room, so close to where he was working out? Luce sighed and pushed the door back open, thinking if she had to go in, at least she'd make it quick. Reaching for her key, she sneaked one last look at him. His pace was slowing, slowing, but his feet still barely touched the ground. And then, with one final light-as-air bounce, he came to a stop and turned around to face her. For a moment, he said nothing. She could feel herself blush and really wished she wasn't wearing such a horrible bathing suit. "Hi," was all she could think to say. "Hi," he said back, in a much calmer tone of voice. Then, gesturing at her suit, said, "Did you win?" Luce laughed a sad, self-effacing laugh and shook her head. "Far from it." Daniel pursed his lips.
"But you were always..."
"I was always what?"
"I mean, you look like you might be a good swimmer."
He shrugged.
"That's all."
She stepped toward him. They were standing just a foot apart. Drops of water fell from her hair and pattered like rain on the gym mats. "That's not what you were going to say," she insisted. "You said I was always..." Daniel busied himself coiling the jump rope around his wrist.
"Yeah, I didn't mean you. I meant in general. They're always supposed to let you win your first race here. Unspoken code of conduct for us old-timers."
"But Gabby didn't win either," Luce said, crossing her arms over her chest. "And she's new. She didn't even get in the pool."
"She's not exactly new, just coming back after some time off."
Daniel shrugged, giving away nothing of his feelings for Gabby. His obvious attempt to look unconcerned made Luce even more jealous. She watched him finish looping the jump rope into a coil, the way his hands moved almost as quickly as his feet. And here she was, so clumsy and lonely and cold and left out of everything by everyone. Her lip quivered.
"Oh, Lucinda,"
he whispered, sighing heavily. Her whole body warmed at the sound. His voice was so intimate and familiar. She wanted him to say her name again, but he had turned away. He hooked the jump rope over a peg on the wall.
"I should go change before class."
She rested a hand on his arm. "Wait." He wrenched away as if he had been shocked, and Luce felt it too, but it was the kind of shock that felt good. "Do you ever get the feeling?" She raised her eyes to his. Up close, she could see how unusual they were. They seemed gray from far away, but up close there were violet flecks in them. She knew someone else with eyes like that. "I could swear we've met before," she said. "Am I crazy?"
"Crazy? Isn't that why you're here?"
he said, brushing her off. "I'm serious."
"So am I."
Daniel's face was blank.
"And for the record..."
He pointed up at a blinking device attached to the ceiling.
"The Reds do monitor for stalkers."
"I'm not stalking you." She stiffened, very aware of the distance between their bodies. "Can you honestly say you have no idea what I'm talking about?" Daniel shrugged. "I don't believe you," Luce insisted. "Look me in the eye and tell me I'm wrong, that I've never in my life seen you before this week."
Her heart raced as Daniel stepped toward her, placing both hands on her shoulders. His thumbs fit perfectly along the grooves of her collarbone, and she wanted to close her eyes at the warmth of his touch. But she didn't. She watched as Daniel bowed his head so his nose was nearly touching hers. She could feel his breath on her face. She could smell a hint of sweetness on his skin. He did as she asked. He looked her in the eye and said, very slowly, very clearly, so that his words could not possibly be misunderstood, "You have never, in your life, seen me before this week. Life, seen me before this week." 7. Shedding Light.
"Now where are you going?" Cam asked, lowering his red plastic sunglasses.
He'd appeared outside the entrance of Augustine so suddenly that Luce almost plowed right into him. Or maybe he'd been there a while, and she just hadn't noticed in her haste to get to class. Either way, her heart started beating quickly, and her palms began to sweat.
Class? Luce answered, because where did it look like she was going?
Her arms were full, with her two hefty calculus books and her half-completed religion assignment. This would have been a good time to apologize for leaving so suddenly last night. But she couldn't bring herself to do it. She was already so late. There hadn't been any hot water in the locker showers, so she'd had to trek all the way back to the dorm. Somehow, what had happened after the party didn't seem important anymore. She didn't want to draw any more attention to her leaving, especially not now, after Daniel had made her feel so pathetic. She also didn't want Cam to think she was being rude. She just wanted to steer past him and be by herself so she could move on from this morning's string of embarrassments. Except, the longer Cam gazed at her, the less important it felt to leave, and the less Luce's pride stung over Daniel's dismissal. How could one look from Cam do all that? With his clear, pale skin and jet black hair, Cam was different from any guy she'd ever known. He exuded confidence, and not just because he knew everyone, and how to get everything, before Luce had even figured out where her classes were. Right then, standing outside the drab, gray school building, Cam looked like an arty black-and-white photograph, his red shades technicolored in.
"Class, eh?"
Cam yawned dramatically. He was blocking the entrance, and something about the amused way his mouth was set made Luce want to know what wild idea he had up his sleeve. There was a canvas bag slung over his shoulder and a disposable espresso cup between his fingers. He pressed stop on his iPod, but left the earbuds dangling around his neck. Part of her wanted to know what song he'd been listening to and where he'd gotten that black market espresso. The playful smile, visible only in his green eyes, dared her to ask. Cam skimmed a sip off the top of his coffee. Holding up his index finger, he said,
"Allow me to share my motto about sword and cross classes. Better never than late."
Luce laughed, and then Cam pushed his sunglasses back up on his nose. The lenses were so dark, she couldn't see even a hint of his eyes.
"Besides," he smiled, flashing her a white arch of teeth, "it's just about lunchtime, and I've got a picnic."
Lunchtime? Luce hadn't even had breakfast yet. But her stomach was growling, and the idea of being reamed by Mr. Cole for missing all but the last 20 minutes of morning classes seemed less and less appealing the longer she stood next to Cam. She nodded at the bag he was holding. "Did you pack enough for two?" Steering Luce with a broad hand on the small of her back, Cam led her across the commons, past the library and the dismal dorm. At the metal gates to the cemetery, he stopped.
"I know this is a weird place for a picnic," he explained, "but it's the best spot I know to dip out of sight for a little while. On campus, anyway. Sometimes I just can't breathe in there."
He gestured toward the building. Luce could definitely relate to that. She felt both stifled and exposed almost all the time at this place. But Cam seemed like the last person who would share that new student syndrome. He was so collected. After that party last night, and now the forbidden espresso in his hand, she would never have guessed he'd feel suffocated, too, or that he'd pick her to share the feeling with. Past his head, she could see the rest of the run-down campus. From here, there wasn't much of a difference between one side of the cemetery gates and the other. Luce decided to go with it. "Just promise to save me if any statues topple over."
"No," Cam said, with a seriousness that effectively erased her joke. "That won't happen again."
Her eyes fell on the spot where only days earlier she and Daniel had come close to ending up in the cemetery themselves. But the marble angel that had toppled over them was gone, its pedestal bare.
"Come on," Cam said, tugging her along with him.
They sidestepped overgrown patches of weeds, and Cam kept turning to help her over mounds of dirt burrowed out by who knew what. At one point, Luce nearly lost her balance and grabbed onto one of the headstones to steady herself. It was a large, polished slab with one rough, unfinished side.
"I've always liked that one," Cam said, gesturing at the pinkish headstone under her fingers.
Luce crossed around to the front of the plot to read the inscription. "Joseph Miley," she read aloud, "1821 to 1865. Bravely served in the War of Northern Aggression. Survived 3 bullets and 5 horses felled from under him before meeting his final peace." Luce cracked her knuckles. Maybe Cam only liked it because its polished pinkish stone stood out among the mostly gray ones, or because of the intricate whorls in the crest along the top. She raised an eyebrow at him.
"Yeah," Cam shrugged. "I just like how the headstone explains the way he died. It's honest, you know? Usually, people don't want to go there."
Luce looked away. She knew that all too well from the inscrutable epitaph on Trevor's tombstone.
"Think how much more interesting this place would be if everyone's cause of death was chiseled in."
He pointed to a small grave a few plots down from Joseph Miley's.
"How do you think she died?"
"Scarlet fever?" Luce guessed, wandering over. She traced the dates with her fingers. The girl buried here had been younger than Luce when she died. Luce didn't really want to think too hard about how it might have happened. Cam tilted his head, considering.
"Maybe," he said. "Either that or a mysterious barn fire while young Betsy was taking an innocent nap with the neighbor boy."
Luce started to pretend to act offended, but instead, Cam's expectant face made her laugh. It had been a long time since she just goofed off with a guy. Sure, this scene was a bit more morbid than the typical movie theater parking lot flirtations she was used to, but so were the students at Sword and Cross. For better or worse, Luce was one of them now. She followed Cam to the bottom of the bowl-like graveyard and the more ornate tombs and mausoleums. On the slope above, the headstone seemed to be looking down at them, like Luce and Cam were performers in an amphitheater. The midday sun glowed orange through the leaves of a giant live oak tree in the cemetery, and Luce shaded her eyes with her hands. It was the hottest day they'd had all week.
"Now, this guy," Cam said, pointing to a huge tomb framed by Corinthian columns. "Total draft dodger. He suffocated when a beam collapsed in his basement. Which just goes to show you, never hide out from a Confederate roundup."
"Is that so?" Luce asked. "Remind me what makes you the expert on all of this?" Even as she teased him, Luce felt strangely privileged to be there with Cam. He kept glancing at her to make sure she was smiling.
"It's just a sixth sense."
He flashed her a big, innocent grin.
"If you like it, there's a seventh sense and an eighth sense, and a ninth sense where that came from."
"Impressive," she smiled. "I'll settle for the sense of taste right now. I'm starving."
"At your service."
Cam pulled a blanket from his tote bag and spread it out in a scrap of shade under the live oak tree. He unscrewed a thermos, and Luce could smell the strong espresso. She didn't usually drink her coffee black, but she watched as he filled a tumbler with ice, poured the espresso over it, and added just the right amount of milk to the top.
"I forgot to bring sugar," he said.
I don't take sugar. She took a sip from the bone-dry iced latte, her first delicious sip of sword and cross-prohibited caffeine all week.
That's lucky, Cam said, spreading out the rest of the picnic.
Luce's eyes grew wide as she watched him arrange the food, a dark brown baguette, a small round of oozy cheese, a terracotta tub of olives, a bowl of deviled eggs, and two bright green apples. It didn't seem possible that Cam had fit all that in his bag, or that he'd been planning on eating all this food by himself.
"Where did you get this?" Luce asked.
Pretending to focus on tearing off a hunk of bread, she asked, "And who else were you planning on picnicking with before I came along?"
"Before you came along?"
Cam laughed.
"I can hardly remember my bleak life before you."
Luce gave him the slightest of snide looks, so he'd know that she found the remark incredibly cheesy and just a little bit charming. She leaned back on her elbows on the blanket, her legs crossed at the ankles. Cam was sitting cross-legged facing her, and when he reached over her for the cheese knife, his arm brushed, then rested on, the knee of her black jeans. He looked up at her, as if to ask, "Is this okay?" When she didn't flinch, he stayed there, taking the hunk of baguette from her hand and using her leg like a tabletop while he spread a triangle of cheese onto the bread. She liked the feeling of his weight on her, and in this heat, that was saying something.
"I'll start with the easier question first," he said, finally sitting back up. "I help out in the kitchen a couple of days a week. Part of my readmittance agreement at Sword and Cross. I'm supposed to be giving back."
He rolled his eyes.
"But I don't mind it in there. I guess I like the heat. That is, if you don't count the grease burns."
He held out his upturned wrists to expose dozens of tiny scars on his forearms.
"Occupational hazard," he said casually. "But I do get the run of the pantry."
Luce couldn't resist running her fingers along them, the infinitesimal pale swells fading back into his paler skin. Before she could feel embarrassed by her forwardness and pull away, Cam grabbed her hand and squeezed. Luce stared at his fingers wrapped around hers. She hadn't realized before how closely the shades of their skin matched. In a landscape of southern sunbathers, Luce's paleness had always made her feel self-conscious. But Cam's skin was so striking, so noticeable, almost metallic. And now she realized she might look the same to him. Her shoulders shivered, and she felt a little dizzy.
"Are you cold?" he asked quietly.
When she met his eyes, she knew he knew she wasn't cold. He scooted closer on the blanket and dropped his voice to a whisper.
"Now I guess you're going to want me to admit that I saw you crossing the quad through the kitchen window and packed all this up in the hopes of convincing you to skip class with me."
This was when she would have fished in her drink for ice, if it hadn't already melted in the stale September heat.